Good afternoon. I'd like to call this meeting of the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee to order at 1:32 p.m. We are in Belts, room 105 of the Thomas Stewart Building in the nation's most beautiful capital city of Juneau, Alaska. Today is Monday, March 24th, 2025. Members present are Senator Merrick, Senator Gray Jackson, Senator Dunbar, Senator Yunt, and myself, Senator Bjorkman. Let the record reflect that we have a quorum to conduct business. Welcome, everyone, to Senate Labor and Commerce. Please turn off or silence your cell phones. I'd like to extend an especially warm Senate Labor and Commerce welcome to our recording secretary, Carrie Tupo, and our LIO moderator, Naomi Boyles Mulick. We have three items on our agenda today. First is Senate Bill 137, Extend Boards of Midwives, Nursing, and Parole. Second will be Senate Bill 55, TRS Contribution Rate, PERS/TERS, Social Security, or SBS. And finally, third will be Senate Bill 96, Child Care Tax Credits. First up is Senate Bill 137. To present the bill, we have Mr. Matt Churchill. Mr. Churchill, welcome to Senate Labor and Commerce. Please make yourself at home at the table there. State your name for the record and begin your presentation of the bill.
Thank you, Chair Bjorkman and members of the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee for hearing Senate Bill 137 today. For the record, my name is Matthew Churchill. I'm staff to Senator Bjorkman. This bill extends the sunset dates of three professional boards, those of direct entry midwives, nursing, and parole, from their currently existing statutory sunset dates of June 30, 2025. The state's 2024 audits of the boards of midwives and nursing each recommended extending the termination date of their respective boards by 6 years. The audit of the Board of Parole recommended extending the sunset date by 4 years. Senate Bill 137 follows the recommended 6-year extension for each of the boards of midwives and nursing to June 30th, 2031, and the recommended 4-year extension of the Board of Parole to June 30th, 2029. Chris Curtis, our legislative auditor, will speak further to the committee today regarding the details of the state's audits. The committee will also be hearing today from Director Sylvan Robb of the Division of Corporations, Business, and Professional Licensing. For the boards, we also have today Chair Holly Steiner on the telephone, I believe, and Chair Danette Schloeder of the Board of Nursing on the phone as well, and Chair Letone Tupo of the Board of Parole is here in person today. Thank you again for hearing Senate Bill 137 today.
Thank you very much, Mr. Churchill. Are there any questions from committee members? Hearing and seeing none, we will go on now to our invited testimony. First up, we have our legislative auditor, Ms. Chris Curtis. Ms. Curtis, welcome back to Senate Labor and Commerce. Please have a seat and put yourself on the record and begin your testimony.
Good afternoon. For the record, I'm Chris Curtis, your state legislative auditor. In your meeting packets, I believe you have three sunset audits. You've got nursing, parole, and midwives. I'd like to start with nursing. So overall, we found this board served the public's interest by conducting their meetings in an effective manner, by actively amending nursing regulations, and by effectively licensing nursing professionals. The audit also concluded that board-related cases were not consistently investigated in a timely manner, and one board seat had been vacant for an extended period. So we're recommending, again, a 6-year extension. If you turn to page 7 of the report, you will find Exhibit 2. This exhibit summarizes our review of how fast or how timely nurses were issuing their licenses. And we found, of the licenses we reviewed, that 30% of them had took over 4 months to be issued by the board. The delays were caused by staff shortages and a significant increase in their workload. If you turn to the next page, you'll see why their workload has increased. Exhibit 3 on page 8 shows that as of February 2024, the board had just over 27,000 active licenses and permits. And this is an increase of 37% compared to 2018 sunset audit. Now, the increases were mainly in the area of registered nurses who are providing services in Alaska as a result of the COVID pandemic. The board's schedule of revenues and expenditures is on page 10, and as of February 2024, the board had a surplus of approximately $3.4 million. And despite the large surplus, the board and DCPPL were not planning on decreasing licensing fees. That is because they believe that surplus would naturally decline and that that number of high licenses would naturally go down, and so their surplus would go down. The audit has only one recommendation for improvements. Beginning on page 14, we recommend that the commissioner work with policymakers to improve the recruitment and retention of investigators. We tested 35 board-related cases and found 9 of them, or 25%, had unjustified periods of inactivity. And you can see on page 14 that many of them had multiple periods of unjustified inactivity. And the delays were caused by vacancies, turnover, and the time it takes to train new investigators. The management's response to the audit begins on page 23. The commissioner and the board chair concurred with the findings and recommendation. Okay, if there's no questions, I can move on to Board of Parole. Okay. Board of Parole audit report. We recommend the legislature extend the board 4 years, which is half of the maximum allowed for by statute. And my reduced extension recommendation reflects the need for more timely oversight in light of the report's conclusions. And I'll walk you through those conclusions beginning on page 8. So we found that board staff positions were continued to be funded despite board staff positions that are authorized as part of criminal justice reform continued to be funded despite the repeal of the reforms. So when the main criminal justice reform bill, SB 91, passed in 2017, the board was awarded or authorized four additional hearing officers and one criminal justice technician for an annual recurring cost of $591,000. Those positions helped the board effectively cope with a major increase in their workload. But subsequently, the criminal justice reform laws were then repealed in 2019 by House Bill 49. And as a result, the number of hearings declined. You can see on Exhibit 3 on page 9 that the discretionary parole hearings returned to the level that existed prior to SB 91. Also on page 9 shows Exhibit 4, which is the number of parole hearings, parole revocation hearings. And you can see that the number of parole revocation hearings were actually lower after criminal justice reform was repealed than existed before criminal justice reform. Now, despite the decrease in the workload, House Bill 49, which was the bill that repealed the reforms, did not reduce the staff positions, and the audit questions whether those five staff positions continued to be necessary. Moving on to page 10 of the report, we conclude the board generally conducted parole hearings in compliance with state law. However, we noted that discretionary parole was approved at a much lower rate than before criminal justice reform. So if you look at Exhibit 5 on page 11, you can see that on average, the board granted parole 63% of the time before criminal justice reform, compared to only 25% of the time after the reforms were repealed. The board could not provide a specific explanation for the decrease. The audit includes three recommendations, and they begin on page 14. First, we recommend that the board chair work with the DOC commissioner to ensure all hearings are conducted in a confidential manner. The audit found that the Highland Mountain Correctional Center preliminary revocation hearings were at times conducted in the general population area, which violated offenders' rights to confidentiality. Rec 2, the board chair and the DOC commissioner should ensure the regulations are updated in a timely manner. We found that the parole regulations had not been updated since 2015, despite significant changes in statutes. And then Rec 3, on page 15, we recommend the DOC commissioner ensure fiscal notes for pending legislation reflect decreases as appropriate. The management's response to the audit begins on page 25. The Department of Corrections Commissioner and the Board Chair concurred with the recommendations. Corrective action has been taken regarding conducting parole hearings in a confidential manner and updating the regulations. The Board Chair did not agree with the report conclusions regarding the decreasing rate that the board has been granting parole. He states that Exhibit 5 presents an inaccurate comparison and that individual parole hearings cannot be compared because they are unique.
Thank you, ma'am.
If there's no questions, I can move on to the next. Oh,
Senator Dunbar has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I don't understand his response. to that, because they're no more unique now than they were back when it was 63%, right? I mean, is there argument that there's been a significant change in the type of crimes committed and thus the type of parole hearings? I don't think that's the argument they're making. So why has there been this massive, I mean, they approve it about a third as often as they used to. What's their explanation?
Through the chair, I can't address that since it's their own comment, but we have noted changes in the rate of parole in previous sunset audits, probably 15 years ago. And at that time, when we noticed a decrease or a change, there was an explanation that was provided. I believe at that time it was that there was the types of treatment available in the community wasn't there, and so they weren't released. There was a reason, but that's what we were looking for this time, like why the significant change, and there just wasn't one provided.
Follow, Mr. Chair. Is there a fiscal note to that somewhere? I mean, obviously someone that's paroled, it doesn't cost the same as someone that remains in our custody. So what is there a calculation can be done there where you say, okay, there's been a 40% reduction in parole. That means we have, you know, all of these folks now in custody at whatever it is, $220 a day or whatnot. I mean, have they done that calculation? I mean, how many millions of dollars does that change in policy cost Alaska per year?
Through the chair, I couldn't address that. That wasn't in the scope of the audit.
Follow up, Mr. Chair. Are fiscal matters sort of generally part of the audits, or is that not?
Through the chair, for sunset audits, in Appendix A, you'll see 11 sunset criteria that we use, and we address each one of those. However, when we conduct an audit, anything comes to our attention that we believe should be raised, i.e. this type of thing, we certainly will include it. As far as whether there was a fiscal impact, you know, we asked for the reason, and there simply wasn't one that was provided. So I couldn't tell you whether it was fiscal or not.
Okay. That might be a more appropriate topic for the DOC Finance Subcommittee. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator Dunbar. Any further questions about the Board of Parole audit? Just by way of comment, we can hear from Department of Corrections as well as courts. Court system on this item as well.
All right, moving on to the Board of Certified Direct Entry Midwives. Overall, we found the board served the public's interest by conducting their meetings in accordance with state law and actively amending regulations to enhance public safety and improve the certification process. The audit also concluded that the board generally certified midwives in compliance with state law, but it documentation improvements were needed. The audit also noted that the board did not audit compliance with certification renewal requirements in a timely manner. So we're recommending a 6-year extension. On page 5, we discuss a change in how midwives are certified, and certified is another term for licensure for this board. Starting January 2023, the board began requiring midwives to obtain the Certified Professional Midwife Credential from the North American Registry for Midwives, also referred to as NARM. Now, as a result, some board functions are now duplicate functions of the national organization. And prior to this change, we noted that the board or the midwives had one of the highest, if not the highest, certification costs. And this change further increased the costs for obtaining and maintaining state certification. If you turn to page 7, Exhibit 3, you will see the schedule of licensing activity for this board. There are only 41 certified midwives and apprentice midwives. They do show on page 9 that they have a surplus of $77,000, and the report includes 3 recommendations, and they begin on page 12. First, we recommend Office of the Governor, Boards and Commissions Director, work with the board to fill vacant board seats in a timely manner. This has to do with the vacant physician seat. It's one of the 5 members, and it's been vacant for many years. Rec 2, for Division of Corporations Business and Professional Licensing Director, to improve training to ensure certifications are supported by adequate documentation, and for the board to thoroughly review applications before approval. And this recommendation comes from an error we found when testing license process regarding incomplete clinical verification information. And then the final rec on page 13, we recommend the commissioner work with policymakers to improve the recruitment and retention of licensing staff So this has to do with finding that the DCBPL staff were not auditing compliance with renewal requirements due to changes in management and staffing shortages. Management's response to the audit begins on page 23. In general, the commissioner and boards and commissions director agree with their recommendations and conclusions. The board chair is less agreeable, and her response begins on page 27. She points out that the recommendations are mainly addressed to the Office of the Governor or DCBPL, and as such, she's requesting an 8-year extension.
Are there any questions from committee members?
And if I can allow one more comment. I did review. We have been auditing this board, the specific board, every 2 years for this is the third cycle. They received over the last four sunset cycles. They received 1 4-year extension and 3 2-year extensions. So we have been with this board for quite a bit of time, and I'm recommending a 6-year extension.
Thank you, Ms. Curtis. Seeing no further questions, we will call on, if there are questions, Director Sylvan Robb from the Division of Corporations, Businesses, and Professional Licensing. Welcome to Senate Labor and Commerce, ma'am. If you have some remarks that you would like to make, you might make those now. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good afternoon, members of the committee. For the record, Sylvan Robb, Director of the Division of Corporations, Business and Professional Licensing. Going in the order that Legislative Auditor Ms. Curtis did, starting with the Board of Nursing, the division has taken substantial steps to improve the recruitment of investigators. We are working hard to get the word out on those positions as well as make them more attractive for folks. We've tried to reduce the span of control a little bit and allow them to get additional training. And so we have seen good results from that. And so we expect that in the next audit we won't have a similar recommendation related to untimely periods during the investigations. And I'll pause, Mr. Chair, just in case there are questions. All right. Thank you. And then speaking to the Board of Certified Direct Entry Midwives, the audit found three recommendations. One was related to getting that seat on the board filled for either a physician with an OB practice or with specific training in obstetrics. As noted, that seat has been vacant for many years. It has proved extremely challenging to find an individual who's interested in filling that seat. We continue to do what we can to assist the governor's office, boards, and commissions to try to find someone and we continue to work toward that. The second recommendation was relating to ensuring that there's sufficient documentation as well as that board members are taking the time to review that documentation prior to issuing licenses. Again, the division has taken a number of steps. As noted, period of the audit was when we were sort of recovering from our very low staffing during the pandemic. We've taken a number of steps. We have reclassified some positions so that we have more supervisors, so that people have a much smaller span of control, so that those supervisors are only seeing 5 or 6 of our 44 programs that we oversee for professional licensing, and so they're able to keep a much closer eye, provide better ongoing training for staff members when they come on. And additionally, we have gotten a fairly robust, at this point, board training. You may remember that several years ago, the Department of Commerce created a board advisor position because the department has about 35 boards. And so that person has been available to work with the board on training regarding their requirements. And then finally, the third recommendation was about recruiting licensing staff. We worked with classifications within the Division of Personnel on a classification study for what was formerly our occupational licensing examiners and then their supervisors, which used to be called records and licensing supervisors, to reclass those positions into a job series so that there is more opportunity for people to see a career path for themselves and see advancement within the division. And so we are that took effect in last July. So we don't have a great length of time to see the data, but we feel like we're already seeing positive benefits from that. We've had a number of staff already promote within the division within that job series.
Very well. Thank you. Are there any questions? Thank you, Director Robb. At this time, we will have the chair of the Board of Direct Entry Midwives, Ms. Holly Steiner. Ms. Steiner, can you hear me?
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am. Could you please state your name for the record and begin your presentation?
Good afternoon. My name is Holly Steiner. I am the Certified Direct Entry Midwife Board Chairman. I practice in the Palmer West Villa area. A little background that has already been presented. We were given a 2-year sunset previously for the oversight of cleaning up some staffing issues and board seat vacancy issues and to secure another audit. Our most recent audit was done in June of 2024 and presented to the board in January of this year. Our board has worked hard to comply with the recommendations of the previous audit, as well as the current most recent audit. We currently have 4 of our 5 seats filled, including the OB doctor seat, which has been recently filled, which is exciting. We have 1 empty seat, which is the public member, which in my effort to recruit for that seat, I learned that this is common amongst many boards currently. I know of 1 person that has applied for that seat about 1 week ago that I recruited personally. We have a wonderful licensing examiner, Sherry Ryan, who's been with us a little over a year now and is doing a great job. Our board recently wrote regulations that bring us into compliance with national standards for licensed midwives by requiring the nationally recognized license of certified professional midwife. Although, as pointed out in our recent audit, this does increase our licensing costs by $210 every 3 years. The majority of CDMs in this state are in favor of this. This has also decreased workload to staff and has streamlined licensure, putting the brunt of the work on the National American Registry of Midwives, who gives this license. And they have nearly identical standards to licensure as our own of the board. This is my 2nd go around on the board. I served before from 2005 to 2012, and I can attest that the difference in board efficiency and productivity is much improved since then. I am very impressed with our current board and staff. The most recent audit is in favor of extending the board 6 years. And the Board of Certified Direct Entry Midwives is in agreement with this and asks for a 6-year extension. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Steiner. Are there any questions? Hearing and seeing none, we'll go next to our invited testifier for the Board of Nursing, Chair Danette Schloeder. Ms. Schloeder, please state your name and affiliation for the record and begin your presentation.
Good afternoon. My name is Danette Schlater, and I am the chair of the Alaska Board of Nursing. I am here today representing the 6 current members of our Board of Nursing. The Alaska Board of Nursing plays a critical role in safeguarding public health and ensuring the highest standards of nursing care in our state. Nurses are the backbone of our healthcare system, providing care in hospitals, rural clinics, and communities across Alaska. The Board of Nursing ensures that these professionals are well-trained, properly licensed, and held to the highest ethical and clinical standards. Patient safety would be at risk, and the quality of our health care in our state would decline. Extending the Board of Nursing is not just about regulation. It is about maintaining trust, public trust that their nurses are competent and qualified, employers trust that licensure requirements are upheld. And nurses trust that we have a governing body advocating for their profession. We thank you for considering extending the board through Senate Bill 137. Doing so protects patients, supports healthcare professionals, and upholds the integrity of our healthcare system. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Schlater. Are there any questions? Hearing and seeing none, we'll go now in the room to our next invited testifier, Chair of the Board of Parole, Lay Tupou. Mr. Tupou. Welcome to Senate Labor and Commerce. Please state your name and affiliation for the record.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Layton Tupou. I was appointed to be the chairman of the Alaska Board of Parole toward the end of 2022. One of the first things I did is to review the audit that was done by the legislative audit in 2019. And there was some recommendation that I noticed that it was not met. So I work with the Department of Corrections trying to accommodate the recommendation. And I believe we came close to complete all of them. I know it took a long time, but it was just a week ago that we finally completed all the recommendation that was made in 2019. The issue that was raised in regards to the, I guess I call it the BCN, that was created because of SB91, that was one of my biggest concerns. I didn't see the justification of retaining them because of the decrease in caseload. So I worked with the Department of Corrections trying to figure out what do we do with those. I even reached out to the governor's office and see what we're going to do with this. So we made some changes with the Alaska Board of Parole, the staffing. So there was some. So we made some changes, and I think that's where we are right now. I don't have the answer for all of those questions, but I think it's work in progress.
Very well, thank you. Are there any questions from members? Senator Dunbar and then Senator Gray Jackson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Tupou, for being here. So one of the report's conclusions, there was this very large drop in discretionary parole hearings. And I guess first I'd like to understand sort of what's the difference between a discretionary parole hearing and are there non-discretionary parole hearings that you're sort of required to have? And so you can see this large increase after 2016 up to 2018. Now it's lower than it was in 2016 even. And sort of to what do you attribute this very large decrease in parole hearings?
Okay. Through Mr. Chair, prior to the passing of SB 91, that created a spike because SB 91 requires every offender to apply for discretionary parole. That's where the spike came into play. In fact, I think the data shows that there was an increase of 600% from the prior year. So when SB 91 was repealed and was – when it was repealed, then we see a huge decrease in number of discretionary parole application. So that would be my answer for the first question. The second question you asked about discretionary parole. There are – I'll address two type of parole. Discretionary parole – and the other one is mandatory parole. The discretionary parole is when an offender is qualified to apply for early release once they serve one-third of their sentence. And when they apply, that's when they come to the Alaska Board of Parole and ask to be released early. There are some criteria by law and by case law that if the board decide to deny, they had to meet those four criteria. And one of them has been addressed many, many times in the past is the seriousness of the offense. The other one is the possibility they may reoffend again. In some of those hearings, the victims are involved. So there are some factors that affect the decision of the board, either to release or deny. But that is discretionary parole. It is not a right for the offender. It's a right for the offender to appear before the board, but it is the discretion of the board to grant or deny. The mandatory parole is different. Once you serve your two-thirds of your sentence, you are released on parole supervision if your sentence is 2 years or more. So that mandatory parole, we have to release you once you complete that two-thirds of your sentence with conditions that they must comply. If they violate those conditions, then they will come back in front of the board, and the board will have to make a decision whether to for them to remain in custody or figure out a way how to get them back to the community, like participating in some programs or give them a chance to try again, find the jobs, and become a productive member of the society.
Senator Dunbar.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so I was looking at that first chart, and it clearly shows what you described here, this very large increase in parole hearings after SB 91. But if you look at the chart on page 11, the times that parole was granted has stayed much lower even than it was prior to SB 91 in 2014, 2015. And so to what do you attribute that change? Is there some underlying change in the nature of the offenses or the nature of the people requesting parole? Or, that's what I'm trying to understand. You know, why is parole granted now 25% of the time, where at one point it was 63% of the time? That looks like that's probably the height after SB 91. But even before that, it looks like it's granted about half as often as it was back in 2014, maybe a little bit more than half as often as it was then. And to what do you attribute that change?
Through the chair, there has to be some detailed specific study to get the answer for that, and I have not been able to do that. But just from my perspective, when you look at the data that we draw the conclusion there's a decrease, the data comes from a collection of, for example, in 2024, there were 181 discretionary parole applicants that the board was able to see them, some in person, some in Zoom. And that's where the data come from. But each hearing, there's only one hearing at a time. It's not a 180 one time. It's every single one of them, and that's why I say it's unique in its own. For example, the offense, assault, for example, there are 58 hearings on assault only in 2024. Driving offenses, there are 22. So each hearing, it's unique in its own. To draw the conclusion for a collective hearing for 181, compared to 2016, it does not make any sense to me.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Gray Jackson has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, I don't have a question. I just wanted to say hello, Leotoni. Good to see you. I'm glad you're well. And I didn't recognize you when you're sitting back there, so hi.
Oh, thank you,
Senator. You're welcome. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Any further questions? Seeing none, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Is there any committee discussion? Seeing and hearing none, we will set this bill, Senate Bill 137, aside for further consideration at a future meeting. We'll take a brief at ease while we set up for our next bill. back on the record. Time is now 2:09 p.m. here in Belt's Room 105. Next up, we'll have Senate Bill 55, TRS Contribution Rate, PERS/TERS, Social Security, or SBS. This is our third hearing on the bill. During the previous hearings, we had a presentation of the bill, open public testimony, and adopted an Amendment A.3. No further amendments were received. Today, it is my intention to complete public testimony and look to the will of the committee. But first, Senator Stedman or Ms. Foley, would you like to provide a brief recap of the bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Bert Stedman, the senator from District A, all the islands in Southeast, plus a couple little towns that are on the mainland. So before the committee today, and Senate Bill 55, which basically tries to get inclusion of the TERS employees into SBS in the retirement system, being involved in Social Security or a replacement Social Security, which is the supplemental benefit system, or I refer to as SBS, the employees missing about a quarter to a third of their retirement. Significant, and I'm just looking for ways to try to enhance people's retirement and make it fair for everybody. And I just appreciate the committee's interest in working with the bill and looking for modifications. And I'm interested in also the public hearing process to see what the general public thinks.
Very well. Senator Merrick.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Stedman, is there anything preventing the TERS employees from joining Social Security?
There was. There was an offsetting penalty, so I can understand why the TERS, the teachers' retirement system, why they didn't opt into Social Security back in the 60s when they had the opportunity, because some of their employment time wouldn't have been credited. They would have lost some funds. And their salary at the time, 40, 50 years ago, was substantially higher on a relative scale across the country than it is today. We're in probably the middle of the pack or top third or whatever. We're clearly not number one. So the economic times have changed. And in the process of the last couple of years working on this subject, the federal government, through Congress, removed those penalties for SBR, for Social Security. So there is a path, and always has been a path, forward for them to join Social Security by just collectively voting it in at their school district. But it wasn't in their financial interest because of the penalties. Also, we spent some time the last couple of years working with the Department of Retirement and Benefits to get a path forward for them to join the supplemental benefit system, which is what the state used to replace Social Security, which is much more beneficial. Frankly, it's one of the biggest success stories of the state. You hardly ever hear about it, but it is hugely successful. So they would have the opportunity to go either direction as they so choose. So times have changed, both economically over the last 40, 50 years, and then the regulatory environment has also been changed by the federal government. And I'm concerned that whoever in America isn't included in Social Security or something that replicates it is missing the foundation of the retirement system, regardless of what you put on top of it. So it's a significant issue.
Thank you.
Any further questions? Seeing none. Thank you. At this time, we will continue with public testimony. Is there anyone in the room or online who wishes to testify to Senate Bill 55? Seeing and hearing none, at this time we will close public testimony. Are there further questions or committee discussion? What are the wishes of the committee?
Mr. Chairman, I move to report Senate Bill 55, version 34-LS0301/alpha, as amended from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
Is there any objection? Seeing, hearing none, Senate Bill 55, version 34-Lima Sierra 0301/A, as in ANIAC, is reported as amended from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note. Take a brief at ease while we sign the paperwork. Back on the record now, it is 2:18 p.m. here in Belch Room 105. Next up, we have Senate Bill 96, Child Care Tax Credits. This is our second hearing on the bill. During the last hearing, we had a presentation of the bill and took some invited testimony. Today, it is my intention to take public testimony and look to the will of the committee. With us today for a brief recap of the bill, we have Representative Fields and Evan Anderson. Mr. Anderson, Representative Fields, welcome to Senate Labor and Commerce.
Thank you. For the record, Zach Fields, House District 17. Appreciate you all taking up Senate Bill 96. 10-second recap. This bill reenacts the child care tax credit to incentivize private sector investment in child care. And I think, as most members are aware, this legislation was born out of a bipartisan bill, House Bill 89, carried by Representative Colon last year and passed as part of an omnibus at the end of session. I appreciate the committee taking swift action on it.
Thank you, Representative Fields. Are there any questions from committee members? Seeing and hearing none, gentlemen, thank you. This time I'll open public testimony on Senate Bill 96. Everyone will have 2 minutes to testify. Public testimony is now open. Is there anyone in the room wishing to testify to Senate Bill 96? Is there anyone online who would like to testify? Very well. Up first, we have Blue Scheibler. Please state your name and affiliation for the record and begin your testimony.
Good afternoon, Chair and members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of SB 96. My name is Blue Scheibler, and I'm the Executive Director of the Association for Education of Young Children in Southeast Alaska. Alaska's child care crisis is not a new problem, but it's an urgent one. Working parents across the state struggle to find affordable, reliable child care, and as a result, businesses struggle to find and retain employees. Simply put, without childcare, we don't have a workforce, and without a workforce, our economy suffers. The childcare deficit we currently face is too big of a problem for any one entity to solve alone. It requires a partnership between families, providers, state and local governments, and the business community. SB 96 is a smart, strategic solution towards that goal because it allows corporations to contribute to the solutions. Corporate investment in childcare strengthens Alaska's economies, stabilizes our workforce, and creates a stronger foundation for our families' futures. All actions in support of childcare are also in support of our state's economic stability by ensuring working parents can participate in the workforce and businesses can attract and retain employees. I urge you to support SB 96 and move it forward. The stakes are just too high to ignore, and this bill is critical in addressing a crisis that affects every sector of our economy. Thank you for taking my comments.
Thank you very much for your testimony, Ms. Scheibler. Up next, we have Nick Moe. Please state your name and affiliation and begin your testimony.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair. My name is Nick Moe, and I'm the Public Policy Manager for THRED, Alaska Statewide Child Care Resource and Referral Organization. Today, I'm testifying on behalf of the Alaska Early Childhood Advocacy Group in support of Senate Bill 96. The Alaska Early Childhood Advocacy Group is a group of 9 nonprofits from across the state that have joined together to advocate for increased investment and improved policies to support Alaska's children and families. And as you just heard from Blue, child care in Alaska continues to struggle. According to the McKinley Research Group, more than 51% of families are not participating in the workforce to the extent that they would like due to the lack of child care. We have 23,000 children in our state who lack access to child care that need it. And Alaska loses around $164 million per year in economic activity because of this issue. Out of the more than 400 licensed child care programs in our state, currently less than 10 are employer-sponsored programs, and any increase to that number would be welcome and improve access for families. While Senate Bill 96 is not a silver bullet, and we're not going to solve all of the challenges facing child care, it is absolutely a step in the right direction. And in order to stabilize Alaska's child care sector, we need investment across the board at all levels of government, including the private sector. And the business tax credits for child care in this bill will encourage investment in child care options from employers to their employees. And just as a personal anecdote, I worked at South Central Foundation for 6 years, and both of my children went to their employee-sponsored child care program, and it was an amazing benefit. It was very convenient right across the street from my office at that time, and it really encouraged me to stay at my job to take advantage of that benefit, and it would be great if more Alaskans had that opportunity. You know, the child care tax credits, as you heard from Representative Fields, it already passed the legislature once, had overwhelming bipartisan support, passing 35-5 in last year's House, and the money to pay for these tax credits are already in the governor's operating budget. So it makes sense to pass it again and pass it quickly so we can start seeing that positive impact that this bill might have. So the Alaska Early Childhood Advocacy Group encourages your support for Senate Bill 96 as an important step toward improving Alaska's child care sector, supporting children and families, and benefiting our economy. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Moe. Are there any questions from committee members? Seeing and hearing none, is there anyone else who wishes to testify to Senate Bill 96? Seeing and hearing none, at this time I will close public testimony. Are there further questions for the bill sponsor or committee discussion? Hearing and seeing none, what are the wishes of the committee?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move to report Senate Bill 96, version 34-LS0447/alpha from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
Is there any objection? Hearing and seeing no objection, Senate Bill 96, version 34-LS0447/A as in Accutan is reported from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note. Please stay after we adjourn to sign the committee report. The Senate Labor and Commerce Committee will meet again on Wednesday, March 27th, when we will hear Senate Bill 132, Omnibus Insurance, and Senate Bill 133, Insurance Prior Authorizations. As there is no further business to come before the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee at this time, we are adjourned at 2:25 p.m.